Let's talk about spirituality. It's pretty much a given today, whether you call it spiritual or energy or the inner workings or the DNA or the microscopic quantum state, that beneath the material surface of existence lies layers and layers of energy. I'll define it as spiritual energy. Some of it is actually physical energy, but spiritual energy itself needs to be understood. What does it mean? What does the very word spirit mean? So the usual approach is that we have two dimensions, spirit and matter, or energy and matter. Today we know E equals mc squared, and therefore energy and matter are actually reversible, which means there are two forms of energy. Just like when you take water and you heat it, it turns into gas. You freeze it, it turns into ice. Different states of the same reality. But is that really correct, that there are two dimensions? And we usually think of life, okay, there's the material part of our lives, survival, and there's the spiritual part of our lives, the soul, the transcendent, things that are more sublime, more supersensory rather than sensory, the empirical and beyond the empirical, the physical and the metaphysical. But please join me and you'll discover that there's actually a third dimension that's neither spirit nor matter. And that's the secret, the key, to actually dealing with the inherent tension between matter and spirit, and ultimately the way to create total fusion of our spiritual and our material lives. So please join me in this important talk called, Why Did a Spiritual God Create a Material World? Hi, this is Simon Jacobson, and we will be speaking about why did a spiritual God create the material world? This program is dedicated by Susan Reese in memory of her grandmothers, Feige Bas Yosef David, and Bluma Bas Velvel. Generally speaking, you hear very often the two dimensions, spirit and matter. Soul and body. And we see it as two seemingly separate realities, both very much part of who we are. To begin with, very practically and very specific, very pragmatically, we have our bodies and there are bodily needs, which includes eating, drinking, sleeping, exercise, social interaction, everything that we consider to be part of the material world in which we live. And then we have our spirits, the soul. And I don't mean necessarily in a religious context. I mean in the very broad universal context. The soul referring to everything that is not tangible, not corporeal, not empirical. The transcendent, you can call it. The need to go beyond just survival, but to have something that stimulates our inner self. Could be through art, it could be through music, it could be through love, through intimacy, or through religion, faith, spirituality. All the above, part of the above, one of the above. But every human being needs it. So what we usually do is we compartmentalize. Most of our day is occupied with work, making money, trying to survive, trying to make ends meet. And even if we're prosperous, it's all part of the taming of the material world toward our ends, toward our benefit. But there's also another voice, as I said, that we need to satisfy, which is usually we have less time for. So we dedicate evenings, weekends, vacations. It's called our spiritual side, our transcendent side. And we satisfy that, as I mentioned, through that whole list of items and many more ways that people experience some form of transcendence. Just to drive the point home, you travel somewhere, you go to see a beautiful magic of nature, you stand in awe, that's a transcendent experience. And we compartmentalize because they're not usually go hand in hand. When you're busy in the middle of the rush hour, the rat race, the merry-go-round, the roller coaster, whatever you want to call it, the rush hour of our lives, that preoccupies us. And usually that force of gravity drives us into how do we succeed on that material level. But then again, there are the deeper longings of the spirit. For many, music is actually the most soulful thing that they experience. But is it correct to say that there are only these two dimensions? Let's talk about it more in a scientific context. We know that matter and energy. Einstein, the most famous of all formulas, E equals MC squared, that energy and matter are actually two forms of the same thing. They're reversible, interchangeable. Matter is truly energy, and energy is matter. Energy can be converted to matter, and matter can be converted to energy. Simplest example, really, very literally for children even. Take water. Water is a liquid. You heat it, it turns into gas, a vapor. You cool it, you freeze it, it turns into ice. Excuse me. And you can repeat that process many times. You take a piece of wood, put it into a fireplace. That wood, that substance, its elements, turns into energy, into heat, into light. That process today is a given. We understand those two dimensions. The energy part is less tangible, so to speak, meaning to the naked eye, but it's very much part of the same reality. And some actually people call that part all part of matter. Others call it all part of energy. So is matter really energy in a congealed form? Or is energy matter that is a little more amorphous? But that may be semantics, but it's not really semantics, because the question is, what is the primary force? Did it begin with energy and turn into matter? Or did it begin with matter and turn into energy? And I think we all know it began with energy. To use a simple example, another simple example, when you cry, tears come out of your eyes. You don't say first come the tears, then come the sadness. It's the sadness, the emotion, the energy of feelings, of sentiment, that for some reason creates in the tear ducts, a liquid builds up and tears come out of our eyes. The same thing with the smile on our face. Everything in the physical world is an expression of its what we would call it elements, the molecular structure, the atomic structure, the subatomic structure. So it's the DNA on the very cellular level that defines the outer dimensions. So essentially the material world in that sense, pretty much a given, is the tip of the iceberg. And science is essentially digging beneath the tip or within the tip to see what makes it tick. What's going on within? And really all technology is tapping those energies. With Einstein's E equals MC squared, we know that they're really two forms of one. But we shall discover something fascinating, that there's actually a third dimension, which is neither of the two. Because here lies the philosophical, theological, and even psychological problem. If spirit and matter, or in our lives, the transcendent and the existent, meaning our survival, are two forces that really don't work hand in hand, that's why there are many people will argue that asceticism is the true approach. You want to really experience the transcendent, you have to cut yourself off. You can't be busy in the marketplace, in the stock market, in the hoo-ha, as they say, the immersed in material existence and experience that which is transcendent. You have to create space. You have to, asceticism is ultimate, move to a mountain, go into nature. Or if you can't do that, you have mindfulness, we have meditation, create space, which essentially is suggesting that the two are tenuous at best, if not actual antithetical, the two meaning our material lives and our spiritual lives. So indeed, if that's the only two we have, can you really join them together? Are we essentially, I don't want to say doomed, but destined to a battle between matter and spirit? As we see all the time, to put it in very specific terms, matter and spirit battling can include balancing home and work, for example. Personal values and the standards of our peers or our society. Or transcendence and surviving. Those will always be in conflict to some extent. In other words, and I'm using now quoting, let's say, the language of Tanya, the battle between the animal soul and the divine soul, the battle between selfish desires, pleasure, and selflessness, being noble. And we have this choice every minute of our lives when we make a decision: am I going to take care of myself or am I going to help another person? Am I going to be a taker or a giver? So if these two realities are the only thing we have to turn to, ultimately, at best, you can find some compartmentalization, maybe here and there, where they can connect with each other, but not in a full way. Ultimately, it will be a world of duality. That's what it comes down to. So we shall introduce now a third dimension. And this will answer the question, why a spiritual God created a material world? And the answer lies that the very premise is incorrect. God is not spiritual and not material. There's something beyond the two. So let's take a journey into understanding what reality is all about. I mentioned before, when you look at the world, you look at existence, the tip of the iceberg, what tools do we use? We use our sensory tools. That's from birth. We're already experiencing everything through our sensory tools. What does that mean? What we see, what we hear, what we taste, touch, and smell. So if you were to ask yourself the question, what is reality? If you use your senses, it's one of those five senses. You have to either see it, hear it, taste, touch, or smell it. But we all understand that that's not sufficient, because there are many things that happen in life, and actually more significant things that are not subject to those senses. You, for example, cannot smell love, and you can't see or hear it, or taste it or touch it. You can express it with your senses, but love itself is not defined by the parameters of our senses. So how do you know there's love? You feel it. Not feel as in touch, physical touch. You sense it within you. And the same thing with ideas in your mind. They're also not experienced with our five senses directly. Again, it can manifest in our five senses. But an idea, 2 + 2 = 4. That day and night are two different entities. These are concepts. So how do we know they're real? Because we have other tools. It's called the mind. Or as I mentioned, the heart, the emotions. But does it stop there? The answer is no. As I mentioned before, the search for unity, the search through science to find the inner underlying forces, and their experiences that even the mind and the heart, meaning the conscious mind and the conscious emotions, cannot directly experience. We extrapolate, we theorize, or we figure it out through its effects. The black hole, which is now a proven reality. The black hole is the gravitational pull of the star is so powerful it doesn't even allow light to escape. So how can we see it? By definition, a black hole is black. And the answer is you see its effects on other bodies around it. That when you see, let's say, a star or an asteroid or a meteorite or something orbiting in the solar systems and is going on a certain trajectory and then suddenly it swerves and you don't know why. What's causing it to suddenly move? So you have to say there's some effect. And that's how we discovered there's a black hole. Similar to, let's say, if you saw metal on a table moving, you know there must be a magnetic field somewhere. It could be a very powerful magnet that's beneath the surface, under the table, behind the wall. So we don't always directly experience things, we indirectly experience it. And that's absolutely, actually, that's not faith. That's a scientific approach. Every extrapolation about what happened 1,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, whatever it may be, is all based on, not because somebody is a witness from there, but we look at its effect. We look at evidence in some way. The same thing psychologically. You see a person, for example, has uncontrollable rage or other type of reactions. You know there's something going on. There may be built up tensions, maybe built up traumas that we don't see immediately. That happened years ago, but your body, your spirit, your being carries those memories. So today, this also is a given. Just look at your smartphone. This little phone, how much energy does it contain? How much information? How is that possible? Because we know beneath the surface, there's all kinds of forces at work, nuclear forces, atomic forces, which allow for television, for radio, for the internet, for all the technologies that we're so familiar with. But that still leaves us with two realities. The reality, the material world, which is the sensory, and the supersensory, which begins first with emotions and the mind, and now we've already gone into the areas of the superconscious, beyond conscious emotions and mind, that we also can relate to, we can even understand to an extent. And how far down this rabbit hole can we go? Very far. We have no idea how far it goes. Subatomic particles. There's no question we will discover them at some point. So it's like an endless journey. But here's the key thing. Is this all there is? So the mystics teach us that there's another dimension. I don't even want to call it dimension because you really can't use words for it. And that is a force. I call it the higher reality, the essence of it all. And that essence is not defined by senses, and it's not defined by super senses. It's just reality because it's real. So usually we think of life, a person is a materialistic person. Another person has evolved to be more of a spiritual person. And that's the journey. You reach spirituality, you've reached the ultimate, not correct. Spirituality is still part of a human experience. Or you can say even if it's a divine experience, but it's still part of an experience. Then there's just being there, what we call being in the zone. You're just there. And that's not material and not spirit. It's something beyond the two. To quote one of the great 14th century mystic, Rabbi Meir Ibn Gabay, in a book called The Holy Service, Avodas HaKodesh, he writes that just as God has the power to create the infinite, he has the power to create the finite. Because if not, that itself limits him. When I say him, it's just a matter of expression. There's no him or her there for the same reason. What is this telling us? Usually we think of the infinite as being, oh, wow, that's the ultimate. And the finite is limited. That's not correct. Infinite is also limited. It's not finite. As a matter of fact, even though the infinite set of numbers and the finite set of numbers do not meet, meaning that as many single finite numbers you put together, you'll never meet the infinite, you'll never reach the infinite, but they're still part of the world called numbers. Then there's something that's neither infinite nor finite. It's reality. And that reality is beyond both of them. It is true that through spirituality is more conducive because it takes us away from material selfishness and self-interest. Healthy spirituality is meant to somewhat dissolve the ego and self-interest to allow higher truths to enter. So it's definitely a path toward a deeper reality, but it's not an end in itself. That's why you'll find people who are spiritual can also have a certain arrogance. We'll call it spiritual arrogance. But even if not, it's still not the destination. It's part of the journey. So you can say what we're really looking for when we truly look for truth, deeper truths, we're looking for, firstly, getting outside of our own subjective interests and self-interest. We'll call that the materialistic perspective. We move to a more spiritual perspective, which is more about selflessness, getting beyond yourself, service, transcendence, beyond myself, but it's still part of myself. You can even call that the self wants to get beyond itself. So it's still something in our interest. We understand its value. We are experiencing it. It's not complete fusion. You're not completely absorbed in something greater than yourself. And then comes step three, where you completely dissolve. I'll give examples for it. Person is involved in their own interests, they're making money, other things. We'll talk even on an ethical level. But it's about self. Someone gives you a book to read. You start reading the book. The book is very interesting about, let's call it the ideal of charity, of being giving. And it impresses you to the point that you read the book and you say, wow, this is very powerful. And I'm going to start giving some of the money that I make towards helping others. So you've moved from self-interest, you've moved out to help another. But then there's the next step. You're reading the book, you get so absorbed by it, you can't even describe that you're feeling inspired to give charity. You know, sometimes you read a book, you get so absorbed, you don't even realize you're turning the pages. You don't even realize it's words and letters on the page. Especially a good writer, you get so consumed, so absorbed, that there's no difference between the subject and the object, like a fish in water. You become one with the water. That is the ultimate reality, where it's not even a quality that you've achieved. It's not even a transcendent quality. It's just you're there. You've arrived. It's a state of being, not an experience. It's very different. You could have love, I love you, as a verb. You could have love as a state of being. I am in love. I'm experiencing love. To use a very simple example right now, what is your left leg doing? So until I asked you that question, you weren't probably thinking about your left leg. But it was there, and it existed, and it had whatever is going on, but you were not thinking about it. Does that make it less real because you didn't think about it? What I'm trying to say is that health doesn't feel like anything. If someone asks you, what does it feel like to be healthy? The answer is, if you have an answer, you probably need to see a doctor. Health shouldn't feel like anything. Your blood should be flowing seamlessly. Your breathing should be effortless. There should be no sensation at all. So sensation itself, as important as it is in life, is still a conscious experience, whether it's a material sensation or a spiritualistic sensation. The ultimate is to just be there. A type of lack of self-consciousness would be the right word. No self-consciousness. Not just self-conscious in the negative sense where a person is inhibited or feels shy or feels like others are looking at them, being judged. I mean self-conscious that you're like a child, a newborn child is completely not self-conscious. They only become self-conscious when others make them feel that way. It's like a sense of belonging, completely belonging. When you are completely engulfed by love, you're completely engulfed by an embrace where there is no distinction between subject and object. That's the ultimate goal. And that's why when Moses asked God to show me your face, they were having an intimate conversation, a very deep conversation, personal, like a person speaks to their friend. Moses was on that level. He says, show me your glory. And God responds, no man can see me and live. This wasn't being mean. God was telling him the truth. As long as you want it on your terms, it won't be me. I can show myself to you, my outer expression, as God indeed says to him. But my being me on my terms, then you would be me. Because this is a reality of a different sort. And the truth is, what God really was saying to him, that if you can strip yourself of all your interests and all your needs, and even your wanting me to see me on your terms, then you will see me by letting go. Not by pursuing, because pursuing is ultimately going to be somewhere on your terms. So in truth in life, we need both. No one's suggesting suddenly letting go of all your interests. It's a journey. So basically, from self-interest, we come into spiritual interest, which means interest beyond ourselves, the idea of love, the idea of care for another. And then we come to a point where we experience a reality that is beyond spirit and matter. So if you really want to define God, you have to define God not by any definition. God is neither spiritual nor material. Spirituality is also part of the creation, also part of the tools we're given to reach deeper places. Because if we were just emotional creatures, like any animal, our main drive would be survival. Whatever I need to take care of myself and my family, to breed, to feed, to hunt. And that's that. There's no time for meditation. There's no time for transcendence. That's part of the functionality of this material world. But we were blessed with a mind that explores, a mind that wonders, a mind that's curious, that imagines, that dreams, that fantasizes. We look up to the heavens. What's out there? Why are we here? These are questions that are uniquely human. The reason is because we have a mind, and the mind is the seat of the soul. Because that soul that's pulsating within us isn't just a soul that's giving us life to survive. It also has a transcendent dimension. The soul is compared to a flame, the body to a wick. A flame is always flickering, always longing, always seeking, reaching upward in a transcendent longing. So our soul creates the restlessness that defines the human being. Healthy restlessness, healthy angst, that there's something more than the tip of the iceberg. There's something deeper. And that mind allows us to go beyond our emotional subjectivity, allows us to explore areas that maybe not even be in our interest. But something about us wants to connect to it. The mind leads us in turn, the conscious mind, to the superconscious mind, which now is where the mind begins to dissolve into the spirit. But it's still spiritual. It's spiritual in the sense that it is now not something defined by the material world, defined by something greater and higher reality, where we come to realize we're not just physical beings on a spiritual journey, we're spiritual beings on a physical journey. So there you have soul and body, two states of consciousness, and even a superconscious state. But that will then lead us, and it's meant to lead us, to a reality that looks at both of those equally. Initially, matter and spirit seem to conflict with each other. That's as long as you don't realize the third dimension. The third dimension says, you want to know how you relieve the tension between survival and transcendence, between matter and spirit, between matter and energy? You spiritualize the material. How could you do that? They seem to be two different forces, because no, they're coming from a higher reality that's not defined by either of them. And that's how the journey works. So the ultimate E equals MC squared, we're told, began actually 3,335 years ago. It's a holiday that we're going to be celebrating this week called Shavuot, Sinai, the revelation at Sinai, which remains the greatest event in all of history. What was the revolution? What was so dramatic about what happened at Sinai? It helped open up a door. It opened the door, I should say, between spirit and matter, allowing us to spiritualize the material, basically connecting to that third dimension. So when you open up, you begin the Ten Commandments, which we read on that on this holiday. What are the first three words of the Ten Commandments? Three different terms for God. Anoichi, I, Havaya, God, Elokecha, are your God. So it's like redundant, three different terms? No. Elokecha means your God, the God that relates to us, the divine as it relates to material existence. Havaya is the transcendent divine, the spiritual. And Anoichi is that third dimension, as the Zohar puts it, that cannot be even indicated with any word or any name. We need something, so we call it Anoichi, I. But you don't have any shape or form or definition for it. And that is what joins the two, spirit and matter. So it's not just that when we say the idea that we don't just, not just pantheism, that God is nature is God and God is nature. God is beyond nature, but God is even beyond nature. Basically joining the two together, that the God within nature is one with the God beyond nature. So the God, the divine energy within existence, is one with the divine transcendence beyond existence, because there's a third dimension that's neither of the two. What is it called in Hebrew? It's sometimes called etzem, the core essence. Atzmus u'mahus, which is very hard to translate. I'm using the word core essence. Really is the undefined, but it's so undefined that it's even undefined by the word undefined. So then how do you experience it? You don't experience it with regular tools, not with the sensory tools, not with the supersensory tools. You experience it just being there. When you let go you love another, and without any self-interest involved, without any ulterior motives, without any strings attached, you're beginning to get a taste of it. So it goes, it defies the very nature of what we all say, what's in it for me? Even spirituality, I want to know what's in it for me. Well, there's a truth that is so deep that it doesn't have to be in it for you. It is you. It's just who you are. The real you. Not the one that's the defined you, defined either by material definitions or spiritual definitions. The real essence of who you are. And that's what this holiday represents. The window, the door of opportunity that it opens up for all of us. And we're talking here not just on a cosmic level, but on an individual level, you and I. You have these three dimensions. You can find them. The material is easy. Just look around at what your life looks like in this material world. The spiritual is also not that difficult, the transcendent. But then there's reaching the core essence of who you are. And where you're just there, becomes a state of being. You say, like water, does water get wet? No, dry things get wet. Water is wetness. Do you love someone or you embody and personify love? To the point that you don't even have to think or feel it. It's just there. That's being in the zone in the fullest sense of the word. Like I mentioned before about health. It doesn't have a sensation. It's just there. I just feel it. That sense of, it's just real to me. You don't need proofs. You don't need emotional experiences. However, being people of body and soul, we do need those to help us get there. So it's a journey, step-by-step journey. In this context, a three-step journey. And when you reach that, you realize that there's matter, spirit, and there's that which is beyond both that can join the two. And ultimately, even though I've discussed many times, maybe people have a problem with the word God. I'm using God because I've gotten beyond the stereotype, like the Levi Yitzchak Baditchev, the great Hasidic master that said, the God you don't believe in. To a self-proclaimed atheist, he said, the God you don't believe in, I also don't believe in. So I'm using that word. If that word troubles you, use a different word. But when you come to that point, you come to realize that what the ultimate act of love was, God said, I want to be one with you. Yes, I want you to see me on my terms and live. And for that, I've given you a stepping stones. Begin first, find out my relationship with me, with the higher truth, on your terms. Then discover something that's more transcendent, that's not purely on your material terms, it's more spiritual terms, something for others and so on. And then ultimately you come to experience me in the fullest sense where we become one. One flesh, one spirit, one entity, one reality. So body and soul joined together to reach this third dimension, and that's the ultimate fusion. So we can't ask why a spiritual God created a material world, because it's not accurate. God is not spiritual. You can say, why did God create a spiritual world and a material world? And the answer is because he wants that fusion. And even that because is also a logical thing, and logic itself is part of the creation. So obviously we have to understand all of this beyond the rational, the super-rational, and even beyond the super-rational. And to conclude with a beautiful line from the Zohar, the classic work of Jewish mysticism. It says, "Les machshav etvise beklal." Thought cannot grasp you. Thought alone cannot grasp you. So how are you graspable? Iyu tafis biru'usa deliba. You're graspable with a desire of the heart, with love, with something beyond emotions, that the experience itself. And that's how you ultimately grasp. And this is also true in human relationships. You can relate to someone physically, physical compatibility. You can relate to someone spiritually, intellectual, well, I should start, physical compatibility, emotional compatibility, intellectual compatibility, spiritual compatibility. But then there's the point where you reach that total fusion. In the spiritual language, we talk about five levels of the soul. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chai, Yechida. Nefesh is the biological, the physical connection. Ruach is the emotional connection. Neshama is the intellectual connection. Chai is the transcendent connection. But then comes Yechida. Yechida liyachdecha means total singularity, total fusion, total union. And even that, there's a deeper level that you can't even call Yechida, the very essence itself. So I hope this opens up some new doors and windows to reach deeper states and higher states, not just of consciousness and super consciousness, but into the reality itself, which at the end of the day is the simple truth that a small act, a kind act on this earth, connects you to something that's beyond the beyond, and in turn allows us to integrate it into our material lives. Thank you so much. This has been Simon Jacobson, Meaningful Life Center, meaningfullife.com, where you can find a wide and vast array of materials, videos, classes, articles, workshops on these and many related topics and other topics as well. Just do a search by any word you like. You'll find, I believe, plenty to work with. And as always, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, our growing YouTube channel. Please share this with others. And I'd love to hear your feedback, your thoughts, your comments, your suggestions, your critique. Everyone have a very good week, a very happy holiday. The holiday that has transformed this world, E equals MC squared, the marriage of heaven and earth, the marriage of the divine and the material and the mundane. Be well. I look forward to see you again soon.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.